Friend Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I am your host, Don Nikoloff, and we have a guest scheduled for this evening. However, as sometimes happen, guests space out and either forget that they don't that they have a show, that they're scheduled to be a guest on a radio talk show, or they change their mind, or something happens. We don't know why we're not getting in touch with tonight's guest, but you do it to me once, and shame on you. You do it to me twice, shame on me, and it won't happen a third time. So I'll leave it at that for this evening, and we'll move on to other business on this October the 29th. On the West Coast, and already now, October the 30th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. It's nice having you with me tonight, and I'm going to, in light of the fact that we don't have a guest, I'm going to allow the listeners to be call-in guests and share thoughts, comments, ideas, anything, solutions, anything that's on your mind that you would like to talk about. I'm going to share a few news items with you, and I beg your indulgence as I'm moving through things, because I just learned about 2 minutes ago that we weren't going to have a guest. And as a professional talk show host, I guess I have an obligation to be able to provide some interesting comments, share some news with you, talk about issues, and I do intend to talk about some solutions regarding a lot of things tonight. And so we're going to wing this together. With your help, we'll get through the next 2 hours without any hitches. So if I seem a bit slow, or I seem to be stumbling, it might be because I'm looking for something and I'm doing all this by myself, and so your understanding and appreciation of this unforeseen circumstance will certainly help tonight's show. I'd like to pose a question to the listening audience, and I want to ask you something, and I want you to really think about this. The listeners at BBS Radio are very conscious, they're awake, they know what's going on, or they wouldn't even be listening to this network. And from morning through the early hours of the next morning, there is quite a bit of really valuable information that comes from a variety of talk show hosts. Issues of spirit, issues about health, wholeness, happiness, harmony, joy, music, art, and much of it is focused on the highest aspect of all of those things, and that's the fact that we are spiritual beings living in a three-dimensional world that has a physical manifestation. And the way we deal with things that happen on planet Earth is through the mental body or the mind, and we have meetings of the mind, and we have disagreements of the mind. And our problems get solved or become bigger problems by our ability to solve them and come to some agreement in the process, or to disagree and move in the opposite direction. And if we do that often enough, we move into chaos. It's pointless to mention that we are in extreme chaotic times. If you look at the banking system and the economy of the whole world, really, not just the United States, we are going through some desperate desperate times because we're not getting the truth about what's going on. And so our goal here is to move toward the truth. There are many means of doing that. And if we start from our foundational principles, and I'd like you to consider the fact that this country was founded, and some years afterward, we were given by our founding fathers a constitution. And the constitution basically lays out the precepts for the foundation of this society, how it will operate, how people will think, how government will function, and how the country will adhere together as a unified body of people striving for the same goals. We also have been given a Bill of Rights, which are the individual rights outside of the group, but pertain to each individual that makes up the group. And those rights have everything to do with free speech, the freedom of religion, the right to bear arms, the right to a redress of grievances. In other words, we should be able to go to the government and tell them where we feel that we have issues that need to be ironed out, problems that must be solved. And as our servants, they have a duty and an obligation. They take an oath of allegiance to adhere to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the precepts of the founding fathers to carry out those obligations. That's their oath. And I'm being very general in a sense, and yet at the same time, I think everyone understands what that is. If we look at what's going on today, we can pretty much arrive at an agreement as far as the citizens of the United States that government is not doing what it should be doing. It's not fulfilling our wishes, meeting our needs, and operating according to the Constitution. And when it does not do that, then there is a problem, and this is also described in laws that of which we have 23 million or more, not to mention the more recent over 1,000 signing statements that have been at the behest and the privilege of the president to disregard all of these laws and to disregard our constitutional rights. And so we have laws, and then we have reinterpretation of laws in personal, private documents that are basically designed to take away our rights. Now, that's in violation of the Constitution. Now, I'm wondering, and I want to pose a couple of questions. I'm wondering how many Americans you know who can tell you the lawful definition of treason. And I'm wondering how many Americans you know who can tell you the lawful punishment for treason. Now, I decided to learn what the reaction of American radio listeners will be when radio talk show hosts read the definition of treason immediately prior to presenting our daily news items to you. Now, I'm going to give you a legal definition of treason as it's stated in Black's Law Dictionary. Definition of treason: the offense of attempting by overt acts to overthrow the government of the state to which the offender owes allegiance, or of betraying the state into the hands of a foreign power. Treason consists of two elements: adherence to the enemy and rendering him aid and comfort. And that is found in, this would be Title 18 USCA number 2381. And it's quoted as such: a person can be convicted of treason only on the testimony of two witnesses or confession in open court under Article 111, Section 3 in the U.S. Constitution. That said, now, I'm going to share a few items that came my way today. And these are kind of interesting because they reveal some of what's going on behind the scenes. And this is not the mainstream spin that we're hearing. I actually went to a website. Some of you may be familiar with WorldNet Daily. In fact, I'm going to go there right now. So if you'll bear with me while I move or navigate to that particular page, I'm going to share something with you that was kind of interesting because I wanted to see what WorldNet Daily was talking about. They have some very groundbreaking, cutting edge articles. And, we have the opportunity, through mailing lists and through the internet to research these articles for free. And they also mail these out to people. And, so you might get them in your morning mail or somewhere, in the browsing that you might do if you are researching, if you're looking for these things. Seems that WorldNet Daily articles end up all over the internet because they have some pretty interesting articles. Now, I don't necessarily agree with everything that they say, yet I many times see a synchronicity or I see a likeness in what they're talking about compared to the research that I might be doing or something that might be coincidentally mentioned on another talk show by another talk show host or on another talk show. Okay, now I'm looking for this article and they've moved it. So it's going to take me a moment to find it. I can give you the general background of this article. It's referring to a study that was done, pardon me, on Barack Obama's book. Now, the book Dreams from My Father, according to this article, has been studied by four computer groups that do software analysis of basic facts. In other words, if someone writes a newspaper article, they can analyze the facts and compare it to other newspaper articles that were written by someone claiming to be a different person. And so you read one article and you say, this other article here sounds very much like the same article that I read in this other newspaper, but it's got a different journalist name on it, and so you now are left of the impression, or with the impression, that that article is either completely true, or that two people conspired to write the same story. Well, if you look at propaganda is actually done that way, so you must consider the source of the newspaper. If it's a major mainstream newspaper, let's say it's the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune, it's owned by a very large corporation. And so you're going to get a slanted view of what the particular topic is that's being described. And if you use your discernment, you may say to yourself, well, this all came from the same source. And, the individual writer may put their stylistic touches on it, and then you can compare words that appear in both of these articles. Now, this software that I'm talking about, I found the article now, so we're gonna go into this, but this software has been used to analyze this information in Barack Obama's book, and it's compared to another book. Now, again, this is on WorldNet Daily, and, the article is entitled, Experts Affirm Ayers Wrote Obama's Memoir. Scientific analyses independently find Radical's mark on Dreams from My Father. And this is dated October 29th, so this is today's date. Independent scientific analysis by a number of leading experts supports the literary detective work of WorldNet Daily columnist Jack Cashill that has led him to conclude unrepentant domestic terrorist William Ayers was the primary author of important sections of Barack Obama's highly acclaimed memoir and editor of the book as a whole. Obama's 1995 book, Dreams from My Father, won the 2006 Grammy Award for Best Spoken Word Album and drew praise from Time magazine, which called it the best written memoir ever produced by an American politician. But since July, Cashill has unveiled in a dozen columns, summarized here, his compelling evidence that the co-founder of the radical Weather Underground group, dismissed by Obama as, quote, just the guy who lives in my neighborhood, unquote, shaped and refined the book with his exceptional writing skill and radical ideas. The evidence, Cashill says, severely tests Obama's claim of a superficial relationship with the self-declared communist Ayers. This appears to be a conscious and consequential deception. Cashill points out that, in contrast to Dreams, the Obama writing samples unearthed before 1995 are pedestrian and uninspired. There is no precedence for this kind of literary transformation, he writes. It is as if a high 90s golfer suddenly showed up with his PGA card, with no known practice rounds in between. In a new column today, Cashill reports four different stylometric analysts now have supported his extensive forensic evidence, and he awaits the results from a fifth. Cashill's expert team includes university professors from the U.S. and England in the statistical analysis of authorship, systems engineers, writers, and Ph.D. literary analysts, most particularly professors at public universities, asked that their names not be revealed. Cashill cautions that the data-driven computer analysis is not foolproof, but all of the four independent tests that have been completed point to the same conclusion, that Ayers was heavily involved in the writing of Dreams. One analyst who used his own proprietary software wrote to Cashill that there is a strong likelihood that the author of Fugitive Days, Ayers' own memoir, ghost wrote Dreams from My Father using recordings of dialogue. The analyst said it's also possible Ayers served as a book doctor, drastically rewriting work Obama already had done. A systems engineer told Cashill, the statistical style analysis performed by our research team suggests that the writing style of Dreams from My Father is significantly more similar to the style observed in Fugitive Days than to the style found in any other works by Barack Obama, such as Audacity of Hope. Another analyst writes, we strongly think this bears immediate investigation by the academic community at large, as the initial data presented is highly suggestive that these two documents share large portions of authorship. Now, I'm going to comment on this a little bit, and most news commentators or news anchors are not even in a position to do this unless they've written a book on a similar topic. I have spent the better part of 4 to 4.5 months researching Barack Obama and his genealogy and many of the claims made in his autobiography, which Dreams from My Father purports to be. I did not buy the book. I can't be any more honest than to tell you that. And I never held a copy of the book in my hand, but took the most salient, the most oft-repeated statements from that book, and the most, let's say, likely to be able to be researched in terms of dates and times and places and certain claims that one could research. Now, that sounds like a matter of convenience, but if the statements in the book are true, then it should be very easy for anyone to ascertain that those are actually facts. In other words, I embark upon my research and I find that all of what I find is supported by all the evidence that's out there. Now, that doesn't mean that because someone else repeated the quote from the book or that someone else is giving a speech and repeating the material that's in the book, that makes it true. Let's consider the statement oft repeated by the mainstream media. And if the media is going by the book and this is a statement in the book or just a statement made in a speech or put out there for what we call talking points or spin, this is the propaganda handed out to all the media that everyone sticks to the same story. I use the example of two newspapers, one in New York and one in Chicago, basically reporting the same story where the facts match up, but we don't know necessarily that they're facts. That's a story. It's a newspaper article. It's a newspaper story, in a sense. Now, if they've done research and they're giving references as to who is making the quotes, where the information was gotten, from whom it was gotten, how it was gotten, and then double and triple checked for its veracity, for its accuracy, then we can presume that, again, that those facts are probably true. What we're finding out, though, especially in the alternative media, is that often those facts are so carefully mapped out and prepared, scripted is a good word to use, that the media must comply with the talking points. They must comply with the spin, therefore succeeding in propagandizing or brainwashing the reading or the listening audience. It's done all the time. Now, let's use one example from the mainstream media's nonstop quotes. And I heard someone this evening, and I wanted to stop and go vomit. But the better sense got me, and I said, okay, don't let it rile you. You know, they're going to continue doing this. And there's a specific reference in the article I wrote, The Three Stooges Go to Washington, the part about Barack Obama having gone to a church under the pastorship, if you want to call it that, the leadership of the Reverend Wright, and Obama claims that he joined this church in 1992 and he's been going there for 20 years. Let's just do a little math exercise and let's investigate how accurate that statement is. He's been going to the church for 20 years, and he joined the church in 1992. I'm being a bit elementary in repeating this, but I'm reminding the listening audience of what we're about to calculate. From if we gave him the benefit of the doubt and said he began going to the church in January, let's say January 1st of 1992. I don't know the date. He never announced the date, and we're presuming that he's telling us the truth. So we'll be extra gratuitous and give him the full year, starting from January 1st of 1992. Up to the year 2000, I'm sure most of you will agree, up to January 1st, 2000 will have been 8 years. Okay, right now, today, let's say he left the church today. Actually, he claims he left the church March 31st, but we'll even give him another 5 months. In another day, it's going to be October 31st. So, let's say he left the church October 31st. He's leaving the church day after tomorrow. That is when we're in 2008, so we're not completely finished with 2008. So we would say he went to the church. What's 8 plus 7? That's 15. 15 years and 10 months. I'm sure the listening audience would agree with that. 15 years and 10 months. Now, the statement is that he joined the church in 1992. Again, I'm repeating myself. And he went there for 20 years. We could simplify that whole process and add 20 to 1992. Starting, again, we'll be very generous. and give him the full year, 1992, that will take us up to the year 2012. Well, it's 2008, folks. We got 4 years. So, and he hasn't made it through the complete year. In fact, he made it through 5 months if we give him that starting date. So, it's only 15 and not even a half years. 15 years and 5 months. If we give him all of 1992, it could very likely be less than that. Why does the media keep repeating this mantra that the church that he went to for 20 years? Why do they do that? Why is it that no one brings this up outside of this talk show host and this journalist? It's because this is in my article, The Three Stooges Go to Washington. You can go to directlightproductions.com, click on articles, and you can read that. That's referenced in parts 3 and 4, the part on Barack Obama. It's also been published in the Idaho Observer, and it's been out there now. Part 4 just came out, but it's been on the Internet for over a month. Part 3's been on the Internet for 2 months. Still, the mainstream media keeps parroting the same mantra. Now, and Barack Obama himself is still parroting the same mantra. Now, he's not telling us the truth. And the big question in my mind is, why isn't he telling us the truth? Here we have now, I just read an article, a news item, which is all over the world. People from all over the world read WorldNet Daily. And we have analysts, forensic analysts, both in the United States and in England, in agreement that the style matches the style of William Ayers. William Ayers, who was a member of the Weather Underground, a known communist and basically a terrorist organization, someone Barack Obama has had affiliations with going back many years, even before he joined this church that we're talking about. Now, I didn't write the book, but I read portions of the book, and I analyzed what I felt was provable or disprovable. And in virtually every case, I disproved his statements. The years don't match. The years don't line up. And it adds credibility to this story. And this story adds credibility to the research that I did and the article that I did. And yet, the mainstream media is not catching on to this. And so they're misleading the voters. And the Obama campaign is definitely misleading the voters. And Obama himself is misleading the voters. Now, Phil Berg is another issue that we should talk about. And Phil Berg is the attorney in the city of Philadelphia. He's been a long-standing attorney. And I had the opportunity roughly a month or so ago to speak to him. Maybe it's a little over a month now. And when I did speak with him, I was able to ask him some questions as to why he had filed a lawsuit forcing Barack Obama to produce a birth certificate. Now, it's in law. I don't have the specific law in front of me at the moment, but I can tell you that it's in the law, and it's in the Constitution that you cannot run for the presidency of the United States if you are not a citizen of the United States. And Barack Obama has refused to put a legitimate certificate of live birth in the hands of anyone who can check it out. And I'm going to share something with you now, and this is about Phil Berg. This appeared on ObamaCrimes.com. Berg is outraged that Obama and DNC hide again behind legal issues as their attorney files a motion for a protective order to not answer admissions and production of documents while betraying public in not producing documents proving Obama is qualified to be a candidate for president. It is believed Obama is an illegal alien. And this is for immediate release on the 6th of October. Country is headed to a constitutional crisis, Lafayette Hill, Pennsylvania. Philip J. Berg, Esquire, the attorney who filed suit against Barack H. Obama, challenging Senator Obama's lack of qualifications to serve as President of the United States, announced today that Obama and Democratic National Committee filed a joint motion for a protective order to stay discovery pending a decision on the motion to dismiss, which was filed on the 24th of September, 2008. While legal, Berg stated he is outraged as this is another attempt to hide the truth from the public. It is obvious that documents do not exist to prove that Obama is qualified to be president. The case is Berg versus Obama, number 08-CV-04083. Their joint motion indicates a concerted effort to avoid the truth by attempting to delay the judicial process, although legal, by not resolving the issue presented, that is, whether Barack Obama meets the qualifications to be president. It is obvious that Obama was born in Kenya and does not meet the qualifications to be president of the United States pursuant to our United States Constitution. Obama cannot produce a certified copy of his vault, or the original long version, birth certificate from Hawaii because it does not exist. Now, those are Berg's words. The case was dismissed as of last Friday, and now Phil Berg is taking this to the Supreme Court. It would seem now to anyone out there, and I'm wondering about the listening audience, if it doesn't seem like a practical thing. It may be a bit of a hassle, but for crying out loud, the guy's running for the President of the United States. He's vying for the top job in the country and one of the most, if not the most important position in politics in the whole world. Why would he not take 5 minutes, go down to the health department, go right there to Honolulu? In fact, a second lawsuit was filed by Andrew Martin, a blogger from the Chicago area, who was challenging the same issue there in Hawaii, and he had a team of investigators there in Hawaii, and I also spoke to Martin last week. And Martin really didn't want to speak to me, those were his words, because he didn't want anything I had to say to influence what he was about to do, and he didn't want any of my information to cause someone to say that we were collaborating together. And I told Mr. Martin that I understood what he meant, and then I made a general comment. Even if it's the truth, in other words, if I share some information with you that may assist you in your attempt to get a birth certificate in Hawaii, are you going to say that knowing the truth, having found the truth out from another journalist, is actually going to undermine this campaign to get a birth certificate from Obama or from his campaign committee? That's ridiculous. Well, I was polite with him. We didn't get into an argument or anything like that, but he then became a bit perturbed because he had a lot of work to do, and of course I did too, so we agreed to possibly make contact in the future. And I wished him well, and he wished me well, and that was that. But it didn't solve the problem. Now, he did allude to the fact that he had a team there and that he was now in New York. And he was basically signing books and getting some publicity about his search into this issue of Obama's birth certificate. And he mentioned to me that his team was still there. And he said, look, Barack Obama's got his own private jet. He can get on that jet and just fly over there and get the document and then show it to everybody. But he wouldn't land the plane until he knew that Andy Martin was gone, or were the words that Andy Martin had given me. And I found that to be quite interesting because, according to the mainstream media, Obama's mother, Madeline Lee Payne Dunham, or I should say Obama's grandmother, pardon me, suddenly took ill. How convenient. that the time someone files a lawsuit against the governor and of the state of Hawaii, as well as the secretary of the state health department, who were refusing to provide public documents after he paid the fee, by the way, Obama is waiting to go take care of his grandmother, but will not land his plane until he's sure that the coast is clear. I find that to be highly suspicious. And so we have someone who is willfully sidestepping the Constitution here. And again, I'm just reporting the news at this moment, folks. So in light of that, in that context, I'm wondering how that strikes you, how you feel about that. And I think I'll look for another item. I know that there are similar stories cropping up all over the internet now in regard to this issue. And many of the proclamations made in the book are being debunked. And I take issue with many of the things that were written in this book, Dreams for My Father. Even though I repeat, I did not read the whole book. I didn't feel that Mr. Obama deserved any money from me. The guy came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden now he's running for the presidency of the United States, and it's just not making a whole lot of sense to me why we are able to sort of just take this as if it really doesn't matter. It could be the end of the country. In fact, there's quite a bit more news coming out. There's news that Obama has been filmed at a party with Palestinians in California, where they're celebrating an event which is, you know, the Palestinians are the enemies of Israel, and they're basically celebrating a pro-Palestinian type of event. Now, I'm not sticking up for Israel in bringing this out, but this is held by the media. The LA Times has this, and they're not releasing the video. And it certainly would put Obama in a bad light. Going back to this Andy Martin story and the Phil Berg lawsuit, when an acquaintance of mine found out about this suit being dismissed in Philadelphia, the Eastern Pennsylvania District Court. I presume that is in Philadelphia. I may be wrong on that. Can't say conclusively. He asked me what could be done, and I said, well, the suit also names the Democratic National Committee. And he asked me who the head was of that committee, and I said, as far as I know, it's Howard Dean. He was a presidential candidate a while back until they made him look like a fool because they took a scream he made at a rally out of context, and he sounded like a madman. But Dean is now the head of the DNC, and after a little bit of trouble, my friend got through to Dean's assistant and asked him the question, or asked her the question, why they're not making sure that Obama presents a birth certificate. Why have they cleared him to be the candidate for the Democratic Party and he's not qualified, at least according to the Constitution, because he has not presented that information to the authorities, to the Federal Election Commission, to either of the parties, or to the American public. And the response was, in general, you know, I'll paraphrase the response. It was, that's already been decided in court. That case has been dismissed. And my friend went on to ask another question and to say that, you know, that the Democratic National Committee has an obligation to make sure that this guy is an American citizen. And the woman hung up on him. Now, I find that very telling, that instead of facing the issue, honoring the person that was calling, and at least putting him through to Howard Dean or one of Dean's aides, not somebody who's going to hang up, there's something being covered up. We can only come to the conclusion that something is being covered up, hidden, obscured from the public, and they don't want to even talk about it. Now, how do you feel about that? I think it's appropriate to ask that question because there are some laws being broken here. And we've defined what those laws are. Now, I would give you, or I'd like to give you, what the punishment for treason is as cited in U.S. law. We could use an example that's given at the Cornell University School of Law. Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 115, and this is Section 2381, Treason, or a paragraph, 2381, Treason. Whoever, owing allegiance to the United States, levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under this title but not less than $10,000 and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. That's treason, okay? Now, I've got the following questions for my listening audience to consider. Now, listen carefully to these, and you may want to just make a mental note of these. I have the feeling that somebody's going to call into the show tonight and respond to some of this. If the President of the United States of America, a U.S. congressman or a federal judge were to engage in actions on the behalf of and for the benefit of a foreign nation instead of the United States of America, would they be, by definition of law, effectively adhering and rendering aid to an enemy of the United States of America? Yes or no? Another question now, to which national government do these people truly owe their allegiance? The United States of America or some foreign nation? Number three, if a government official is suspected of breaking his or her allegiance to the United States of America, whereby they swore an allegiance to America, should they be charged with treason and put on trial for treason? Yes or no? And the last question I'd like to ask you, how can we, as citizens of the United States of America, be certain that government officials who engage in acts of treason will be immediately charged and brought to trial for their actions? Now, you be the judge. I'm going to ask the listening audience to call in. And you, those of you who are online, you already are on the BBS page, and so I would ask you to consider calling the Station 2 numbers, even though this is being broadcast on Station 1. Call into Station 2, and I'd love to get your comments. And we're going to take a short pause right now for the cause. You're listening to Evident Footprints, and we'll be right back. So don't go away. More to come.
storable food. Storable food. HempUSA.org has an inexpensive, nutritionally dense, high-frequency food. Hemp, known around the world, will boost your immune system and increase energy levels. Detoxifies the body and reduces junk food cravings. Burns fat and builds muscle. And is easy to digest, non-allergenic, and gluten-free. Can be made into smoothies, breads, muffins, pancakes, cookies, you name it. The entire planet should make this a staple food in their diet. The seeds will scrape the colon wall. The powder will feed the body vital minerals. And the oil will clean the arterial walls and feed the brain. Try our powder, seeds, and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org. That's 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. Remember, vacuum packaging this food will have at least a 5-year shelf life stored in a cool, dark, dry place. Holidays are coming, and this would make a perfect gift for friends and family. Call today, 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
This real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Yes, Dad, boy. Got this here radio, but we ain't got no battery.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go to town and get some for the both of us.
Go to him. Make my day.
Dadgummit, you and your BBS radio.
Welcome back to Evident Footprints. And the toll-free number in the USA and Canada is area code 888-228-4494. Toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. And the direct line in the United States, area code 530-776-5154. Call in and share your comments or thoughts on this topic. Now, I can go on and comment here, and I'll do so until we get another caller. Again, this issue of the birth certificate. Why do you suppose someone refuses to share their information when they want to be the president of the United States. They've set this goal. They've got people giving millions, actually hundreds of millions of dollars to help him accomplish this, and he refuses to turn in his birth certificate or a valid one. We've seen a forgery. It's been examined 20 different ways, and it's an absolute forgery. And they were even able to identify the source of the forged document. In other words, what was used to produce a somewhat workable copy, but the pattern of the paper, the border, the typeset, the lack of proper signatures, their lack of a proper certificate number, and the proper state seal. There are 20 different issues in that document that Barack Obama has posted on his campaign website. And it's a fraud. It's been deemed a horrible forgery. And I wrote about that in my article about Barack Obama. And many people have thanked me for the research that I've done, because I have found many, many other inconsistencies in his story and in the story that the media is putting out about him. And I ask myself, what responsibility does the media have? And I'm asking the listening audience, what responsibility do they have to tell us the truth? Do they not have that responsibility anymore? One would assume if they're a propaganda machine, that that's a self-fulfilling answer in arriving at the conclusion that if they're putting out propaganda, they're not putting out the truth, then what are they putting out? They've got to be putting out spin. They've got to be putting out lies. Are they complicit in covering this up? What does it mean when someone can't prove that they are an American citizen, that they were born in the United States of America? Any land owned by the United States of American parents, what does that mean? And if they can't prove it, are they not an illegal alien? Now, we seem to be going through a period in time where our lawmakers, our servants in Washington, D.C., at least as how I understand and interpret the document that supports a constitutional republic, they like to call it a democracy now. They have a democracy in Iraq, and 1.5 million people were murdered, and somewhere between 3.5 and 4.5 million people have become refugees. That's the kind of democracy they have over there. We have people leaving the United States here. We have people being thrown out of their homes, jobless, no income whatsoever, living in tents. So we're moving towards that area. The only difference is that we do not have bombs dropping, neutron bombs, and depleted uranium, and a host of other issues that the soldiers are coming back telling us about there. So until we have that, what do we have here? They're condoning illegal aliens coming into the country, and yet ICE is rounding these people up and deporting them. Why? Why do they let them in? Is that just to make money in the prison system? Is that to generate income for the security contract people that control the prisons and all the people that have the concessions for the prisons? See, they make a lot of money. Every meal they sell, somebody makes money. That's the people that have the concessions contract. Keefe, owned by Bob Barker of The Price is Right and Barbara Bush. That's why they make money putting people in prison. Those are two people making a lot of money. We have more people in our prisons than anyone else in the whole world. And yet, most of those people are citizens of the United States. Very few of the illegal aliens are in that position. Now, who should take responsibility for campaigning a non-citizen to run for office? Is that not a conspiracy, and is that not committing treason? I ask you. Call in and share your thoughts. Now, my research in the area of Barack Obama, since we're into that, shows that he can't substantiate that he was born in Hawaii, then it raises the question, where was he born? Mr. Berg, as already stated when I referred to the lawsuit in the first segment of this show tonight, and in previous shows, asserts that there is a birth certificate in Kenya, and that one of the surrogate, we'll say grandmothers, in other words, one of Barack Obama Sr.'s former wives witnessed the birth. And even the information, Berg claims he has a recording of Madeline Payne Dunham, the white grandmother, the mother of Barack Obama's so-called mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, witnessed the birth in Kenya. Berg says he has that recording. I've not heard it. I don't know who has. I knew that there was something about Kenya when I first intuited this whole investigation. Before I entered one word into a Google search engine or looked up any documents, I sat down and I discerned what I thought the picture was. And I knew two places were going to come up and be in the forefront of this whole issue. One was Kenya, and the other was Indonesia. Now, the man is from Kenya, but he has an Indonesian name. This is what my research uncovered. I mean, this is not an American name, and one can say, well, his family came over here. Who in his family? Barack Obama? A Kenyan man came over and gave Barack Obama Jr. An Indonesian name. How did this Kenyan man get an Indonesian name? Really, we should ask those types of questions. We should really be thoughtful about this. How in the heck does a man in Kenya get a name of Indonesian origin? Now, the particular area of Indonesia that name comes from is Papua New Guinea, from the Maluku language. I did the research on the name, and it's actually two words. Oh, which is evocative. Oh my God. Oh man. Oh Lord. Oh brother. Oh sister. Oh mother. Oh father. You can put the word O in front of millions of words. And it's evocative. It's an exclamation. The name Bama, or the word Bama, means when. And so the name Obama means, oh, when. Oh, when. It's almost a prophetic name, in a sense. Or it's begging. It's asking a question. Oh, when. Oh, when what, I would put after it. Oh, when what. Or, oh, when, why? Or, oh, when, where? Or, oh, when, how? Or, oh, when, who? You see, we need to ask the who, what's, where's, why's, when's, and how's in this scenario. The media is not doing that. They're parroting this lie that Obama went to this church. And it doesn't matter what the name of the church is. It's a church in Chicago, headed by the former pastor now, because he left around the same time Obama did, Jeremiah Wright, and people that attended that church, and anyone who has investigated that church says that it's a church that is anti-white, it's promoting Africa. And yet we have this dichotomy of Obama's Africanism. Many of the researchers who have looked into this, Dr. Jerome Corsi, says that Obama has got a preponderance of Arabic blood or Arabic ethnicity in his background. That could place him very easily in Indonesia, by the way, because the Maluku people are somewhat Arabic in nature. And they're Muslims. So it would make sense for him to be from there or to have spent time there. They admit that they spent time there, or that's in the story, that they spent time in Jakarta, that he went to a school, an elementary school, and then another school. One is actually considered a Franciscan school, okay, related to the Catholic Church. And the other school is a Muslim school. Although you go there and they'll deny that it's a Muslim school, but they're Muslims. And it's a Muslim country. So how can it be anything but? You see, this is the spin. This is the twist of the words, or the twisting of the words. Now, the time frame that Obama spent in Indonesia is in serious doubt. The story in his book and in his general resume is that he was there attending school, 2 years in this Catholic school and 2 years in this what he would like us to believe is a public school where they taught Muslim religion. From 1967 through 1971, over a four-year period. Also, the story from 1968 to 1972 comes out of the same camp. And his own sister says that he was there from 1968 through 1973, 5 years, when he claims to have already returned in 1971 at Christmas time. We've seen this picture of Barack Sr. and Stanley Ann Dunham Satoro now, because she had married this Indonesian man, they say, and Barack Jr. at Honolulu Airport at Christmas time. You can see the Christmas decorations in the background. If you go to my website, directlightproductions.com, and click on The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 3. You can see that picture at the airport there with Senior and Junior. And I use that with reservation. Barack has a real nice wristwatch on his wrist. A very large wristwatch. It could have been a gift from his father or just something that he happened to be traveling with. But you have this impression that this family is poor, poor background. And Stanley Ann, according to the story, was an English teacher at the U.S. Embassy in Jakarta. And Lolo Satoro, who she had married after Barack Sr. abandoned her and went on to Harvard and then taking up another wife whom he met at Harvard, back to Kenya to father two more sons. The story is that she married Lolo Satoro and went to Indonesia in 1967 and began working for 1 year for the army as a geologist, and then got a job in 1968 again in Jakarta for Mobile Oil. Now, there's a problem with that. In 1966, the U.S. Justice Department here in the United States broke up the Standard Oil monopoly, and they went to Malaysia. They were in Malaysia. Pertamina was the government-controlled oil company and mineral company from 1945 all the way to the year 2001. Kind of leaves out Standard Oil or Mobil Oil, and which became Mobil Exxon or Exxon Mobil. And so Suharto Satoro, excuse me, I'm speaking now of the head of the Indonesian government, Satoro, Lolo Satoro, if he was working for the oil company, would have been working in Malaysia, which happens to be where Maya, the youngest daughter, their daughter, the youngest child, in other words, Barack's baby sister, was eventually married to a man from Malaysia. Now, these things don't happen just coincidentally. You're going to meet a man in Malaysia and get married to a person from Malaysia, most likely in Malaysia. People travel all around the world. But she's also the same sister that's got the dates all screwed up as to when Barack was there. She may be telling the truth, actually. I've heard accounts anywhere from 1967 through 1974 that this family lived in Jakarta, Indonesia, but they have pictures at the airport when he's returning to Hawaii to go live with his grandparents. And they partially helped him, they supported him, and he got a scholarship. How do you just get a scholarship to a school? This was an expensive school. It cost, in that day, in 1971, it cost $12,000 a year. I know people that don't make $12,000 a year, and he's going to school at a cost of $12,000 a year. Now, the claim is that he got a scholarship. Okay, let's say he got a scholarship. Then he goes on to Occidental College in Los Angeles. Then, now, who paid for that? No mention of a scholarship there. And he had Pakistani friends. Now, you know, we can have friends from anywhere in the world. But it definitely, again, Muslim Pakistani friends that were supporting these very out there fringe views of communism and socialism. In fact, his family went to a communist church when they were in the Seattle area, when they were living on Mercer Island. Then we have this story of Stanley Armour Dunham, his grandfather, always moving to another town so that he could get a better job and get a promotion in the furniture business. He was a furniture salesman, they say. Well, got some interesting information to share with the listening audience, because that story's not quite true. It's not true at all, actually. I doubt he ever sold a piece of furniture in his life. I sincerely doubt that. And the family from Kansas, the family that we should pay reverence to, is Dorothy's family from The Wizard of Oz. That's a true Kansan right there, Dorothy. When she hit her head on a shutter when the tornado struck her house, and then it knocked her out, and her brain went into a spin, and then she saw the three aspects of herself as the New World Order sees a person. You have a straw man, a tin man, and a cowardly lion. And it took a little puppy dog to pull the veil back to expose the wizard who was causing all of these things to happen. And we even had satanic references in there. We had witches in there. And we had little people, munchkins. Those were supposed to be the sheeple of society. And this film was released in the United States, was made and produced in America. All the people affiliated with that became great movie stars. And so we were conditioned. It was a propaganda movie. They were actually showing us what their plans were for our country. And it worked then. Why not produce the same story with Barack Obama and the Dunham family? Why not? I sincerely doubt, based on new information I'm discovering, that they ever lived in Kansas. And I pointed out in my research, I honored what was printed, what Obama himself printed in his book, and I honored also what other journalists were printing. But you see, this is the spin. I discovered one little fact, a number, a series of numbers, three digits followed by a hyphen, and two digits followed by another hyphen, and four digits, called a social security number, belonging to Rolla Payne. And this was Madeline Payne Dunham's father. He was an agent for John D. Rockefeller. He was managing Rockefeller's oil wells. And this number, the Social Security number, was issued in the state of Oklahoma. Why does somebody living in Kansas and renting their, or leasing their farm to him, they were not farmers, they're leasing it, the farm. Remember, it has to be a farm. Dorothy lived on a farm. Leased the farm to the Rockefellers and made a modest income. And basically, I came to the conclusion that he was an agent for the Rockefellers, and I discovered plenty of proof that he was managing oil wells, managing the oil business, and even traveling throughout the country because his name comes up on shipping lists, much like the other research that I've done on these people, genealogical research, showing them entering the ports in the United States. Normally people, people do go on vacations and things like that, but this guy, these people were not of the means to go on a world cruise. They were making money, but they were going on world cruises doing business for the Rockefellers and for the Ford Foundation. And there is ample proof that they were in Chicago. I found this in researching Madeline Dunham's addresses. Four addresses, distinct addresses, show up in the city of Chicago. It's first listing, in fact. But we're told she was born in Kansas. They went to California. They went to Texas. They went back to Kansas. Then they ended up in Seattle, Mercer Island, then Hawaii. But now we have proof they were in Oklahoma City. And what is the significance of Oklahoma City? Well, there's a lot of significance. The Air Force Base that was the master control center for World War II was Tinker Air Force Base. And Stanley Dunham was seen there and seen communicating with people that worked at Tinker Air Force Base. For example, the naval commander, the head of the Office of Naval Intelligence, was a friend of Stanley Dunham's. No one's read that. No one's heard that till this moment on this show. You can take that to the bank. Tinker Air Force Base today employs about 26,000 people. So it's a pretty important place. Munitions, all kinds of supplies are shipped around the world from that base. It's a strategic base. It's the base from which they ran World War II in the United States. I find it very disturbing that by 1946, there were Germans being taken there, and we know that the Abwehr, the SS, through Operation Paperclip, were taken and setting up their new headquarters in Oklahoma City. They're known as the Deutsche Verteidigungsdienst, or the Dachau DVD. Dachau, during the war, had a concentration camp, and the SS had headquarters there. They're also known, alternatively, as the Abwehr. Now think about this. Our government made the decision to bring thousands and thousands of spies into our country at the end of the war. And they use the argument, if we didn't take them, the Russians would take them. But that's just the only argument right there. There was really no justification for doing that other than giving us an excuse. So let the Russians have the spies. Protect your borders and keep the spies out. That's simple, but invite them in? No, this was a plot to overthrow this government, you see. This question of treason that I raised at the top of the hour and a couple of times during that hour. This issue of treason, is this not treason to consort with the enemy, to aid or adhere, as it's phrased in that definition, adhere to the enemy, to undermine the sovereignty, to undermine the people of the United States of America? Is that not treason? I'm wondering, is anyone out there listening to this? Is anyone thinking about this? Anyone want to comment on it? Or is this, am I just preaching to the choir. You know all this already. I think there's not enough talk going on about this. This is really central to every issue. Here we have someone running for the presidency of the United States. Now, we can associate the parents. Now, I'll go on. I'm talking about the Dunham family. The Dunham family had an association with this naval officer. I'm not saying Dunham himself was the head of ONI, no. But I will say that he worked for the CIA, and Madeline Dunham, too. Obama's grandparents worked for the CIA, as did his mother. And if they were able to produce a birth certificate, one might be able to find that out. That could be one reason why. But he doesn't have one from the United States. I can tell you that. He's not an American citizen. Why are we allowing these people to parade a candidate in front of us who is an illegal alien? I don't care if he went to school here or not. He's illegal. He's never applied for a visa. He doesn't have a birth certificate. He's illegally in the country. Think about that. Any comments? I'm wondering. I'm wondering if anyone's even listening to this show tonight. Seth, maybe if you're hearing my voice, maybe you can just give me a yes or no. Do we show that there's anyone listening to Evident Footprints tonight on BBS Radio? Any number? I don't care if it's just one person. Do we have one person listening, Seth? I'm not even hearing from Seth. Oh, he's saying yes. Okay, we have at least one. Okay. Thank you, Seth. I feel better already. Okay, I'm not talking to myself. All right, that's great. I'm wondering now, anyone out there has a phone? I'll give you the numbers again. Maybe you didn't catch them. Maybe you're not looking at your screen. Maybe you're using an automatic player that you have loaded into your computer and you're not actually on the site. Write these numbers down and please call in. Give me some feedback on this. Toll free. We pay for the call in the U.S. and Canada. 888-228-4494. Again, 888-228-4494. Toll free worldwide. 877-489-6350. And the direct line in California, 530-776-5154. We have a caller on line four. Would you please state your name and where you're calling from?
This is me, Kathy Cook.
And hello, caller.
My wife, Pathfinders, and I am listening. You have an active listening audience.
I do. Okay, what is your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Kathy Cook.
Kathy, how are you?
Well, I do not miss your show. You are phenomenal.
Well, welcome again to Evident Footprints. Nice to hear your voice, Kathy.
It's nice to hear yours all the time. You have so much to tell the listening audience that I can't wait to hear what you're going to say next. But I just called in so that you would know that you are active, man. You are on key with everything that you say. Even if it is repeating, we have to hear it over and over sometimes, just like a little child. You know? Until people get it in their heads.
Well, you know why I'm doing this, so we don't even need to go there. What is your thoughts on this? Okay, you've been listening to tonight's show. Is what I'm saying tonight making any sense to you? And you know, how do you feel about this?
Well,
if it is making sense.
It makes a lot of sense. The book you started with, well, first you couldn't find what you were looking for because they switched it all over the place intentionally on the internet when you were going to read that article, because when you get on something really good and juicy, they're scared, so they hide it, you know? And then because you are very, very good at anything you search out, you're going to find to accomplish. That's your mission in life, one of your missions in life. Then you went on to the book, And that's almost like a plagiarism type thing, don't you think? Some of it.
Which aspect? You mean when somebody writes a book for someone else, or what?
But like when, you know, you were talking about how you can repeat things out of a book, talk about it, but when you write something in a book that, what was it, Dreams of My Father?
Well, his book is called Dreams from My Father.
Dreams from My Father.
The charge is that someone else wrote the book for him.
Right. Well, I was talking about when someone takes somebody else's aspects and concepts and just twists the words just a little bit here and there and juice it up, just changing it around. That's what you were talking about, right?
No, I was specifically talking about the fact that these people studied the language in the book. The syntax, it's the way words are used, it's the types of phrases that are used, how many times they're said, how the points are delivered or communicated, and similarities to other writings. And they found that William Ayers' style and the words that William Ayers uses and the ideas that William Ayers uses were they compared hundreds and hundreds of words that were matching up, crisscrossing, and matching.
That's what I was meaning, and that's what I understood you to be saying. And isn't that like plagiarism to a degree?
No. Plagiarism would be where you write a book, and I read it, and I say, wow, that's a good book. And then I take specific passages out of your book, or all of your book, and sign my name to it as if I created it. Give it a different title, maybe change the names of some of the people or some of the places, but the basic premise and the basic idea or theme of the book is stolen. That is plagiarism.
And now, see, I never really understood what plagiarism was, but the treason was good, what you discussed about treason. I even looked that up while you were discussing it. The definition of treason.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I've been listening to the whole show, and every aspect and every point is very valid and good.
Well, I'm glad you see that. Now, what do you think should be done about this? You know, I asked that question about treason at the top. What should we do when we discover that someone has committed treason? There's a penalty for it. What should we do?
And it's just like, you know, the old devil gets in there and plants the seeds and such, which you were talking about the other day, about how it's almost like hypnosis, and you said it was almost like he looked over and he winked kind of and grinned at somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a show like, a week ago or so. And it's, if you think about it, the subliminal messages. And so I was thinking, or I was feeling, that if we all raise the octave of our vibrations and to total positiveness of what we want to put out there, how could he even possibly make president?
Well, that's true. For us to raise our vibration, we have to first recognize that our vibration is in need of being raised, don't we? We have to wake these people up, is what I'm saying.
Exactly, and that's what you're doing. And then at the very beginning of the show, and yesterday's show, you were talking about your intuitive concepts as well as your gifts.
Mm-hmm, and that's right.
That's one of the reasons that Evident Footprints is so great, is because your intuition and your instincts go hand in hand. Where most people use just intuition, or they just use instincts, and they don't let them marry to one another to become a holistic picture.
Mm-hmm. And you think I do that?
Oh, I know you do that. I listen to all the shows mainly. But yours, I kind of like take a nap, and then I get up so I can be on, you know, I can hear it, and then I go and lay down so I can listen to the show.
Yeah, I have to be careful not to do that or I'll miss the show. So.
Yeah, but I mean, I do that so that, and I have it like set so that I can turn on Evident Footprints. Because that's just one show that I don't want to miss. I don't watch TV. Probably I've turned this TV on maybe 5 times in 6 months. So, and that was the debates. And I get all my information from BBS Radio, which mainly you're like the head news person. I've been sending you emails. Have you not gotten them?
Actually, I do. You understand that I'm now getting thousands of emails, and I can't respond to all of them. It doesn't mean I won't get around to responding to your email, but I'm answering email from 2 and 3 months back right now.
Did you get the one of the good idea?
I did, and we have to discuss that in a little more detail.
I think that's a great idea. Donald's going to be on a little bit of my show tomorrow. I hope that you call in as well.
Well, I'll have to make it a point. But
an anniversary on October the 13th is when the show started airing.
Hmm. Now, you know, today is my 11th anniversary. My 11th month anniversary on Evident Footprints on BBS.
Oh, did you start 11 months ago today?
Yes, I did.
29.
Well, actually, it's a few. It was last Friday, actually.
Okay.
But basically, I'm on 11 months right now. I'm celebrating for a week.
You know what? Mine is December 7th. 6th. December 6th.
Oh, well. Yeah, I started November 26th, but because it moved forward, on the date here, you know, on the East Coast, Eastern time zone, it was on my birthday, actually, that I started. So,
well, that's a happy birthday double.
Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking to myself that day, well, it would be really neat if this show started on my birthday, and actually in my time zone it did.
Isn't
so that was, I realized that about 2 minutes into the show, and it was like, oh, that's cool. Okay,
that's
so
good.
Let's just roll.
That means to show you where your birthplace is supposed to be with BBS Radio.
Well, it starts a cycle. For me, it started a 7-year cycle right on that day, and that is highly significant. You know, the energies are all aligned properly, and so this is a growth period for me. You know, I'm moving, you know, I'm almost through the first year of that 7-year cycle, and let's see where this goes.
You remember the other day when you were talking about birth and how it's so hard to birth some things?
Oh, yes.
And you know that our death, the last enemy of life is death, it says in Paul's Corinthians. And I was just thinking, you know, anything that we work hard at, and you said this, so I'm going to give you credit for it, but I was listening to it, and I got to thinking, you put little things in my head. I'm sure you do in all the active listeners. You said, birth of anything takes a lot of work. But that's in my words, but you said it in another way. That's how I grasp. Anything, it's like with the strong man. Anything that is going to be great, we have to put more weights on so that we can work harder at it. You had the jazz doc on when you were talking this.
Oh, okay, yeah, that was Dr. B, yeah.
And
yeah, we talked about a lot of really neat things that show. That was Monday night.
Yes, and then, see, you came back with that concept. I know it's probably really hard for you to remember a lot of the things that you say because you say so much. You're like an encyclopedia.
Well, I'd like to be able to remember everything. You know, I also stress to my listening audience that sometimes the spirit, you know, when you're speaking from the heart, and you know this yourself, you have a show. You get so involved in what you're saying that, and you're digging so deeply to bring the truth out. Sometimes you have difficulty finding the correct word to use. And, I mean, that happens to me frequently. I'm talking a lot, and I'm using a lot of words, and sometimes my mouth is moving at one speed, and my mind's moving at another, and I'm reaching down into the heart, where the truth is, where that knowledge is, and I'm bringing that out. Some people think it's in the head. No, it's the stuff.
Oh, I know. You know how I end my shows, listen with your heart and not your mind. Your mind is man-made, people, places, and things along the way. You're so right.
So I will struggle to find that word or that meaning, or, you know, it sometimes it's a feeling that's welling up inside you and it's coming out, and you know, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to share it with the audience and hope that it comes out the right way so that it's not misconstrued or made into something that it's not intended to be.
You
so it can be difficult.
You taught me a new word the other day. I forget the word because it was so big. But I had to look it up while you were talking. And its meaning was, you were talking about, this was months ago, you were talking about the 11s and how people misconstrue the different 11s, what the number 11 meant and everything. I studied what 11 was because you put in my head, not in my head, but in my heart, you know, the different concepts of different things. You know, like, I'm just giving the example of the number 11. And so, it makes one think, and you make one think and feel. And the descriptive adjectives that you use on your show are phenomenal.
Well, I'm just speaking the language, and you have to, I'll attribute as much of that to spirit, you know, it's sometimes you're hearing my voice, and I'm not saying I'm channeling, if you know what I mean. I spend time with spirit all day long. Spirit is guiding me. I pray to God, and God speaks back to me. Now, he won't always give me the answer when I think I should have it, but I get it, and I will keep looking for that or awaiting that answer and asking for that answer repeatedly until I get that answer. And so I will say things that will come out, and sometimes I'll say, wow, where did that come from? That wasn't me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And, you know, a lot of times when I don't plan my shows, and it's like a concoction that would be spoiled that I'm making for food for thought. But one thing that I do want to say is that when I speak a certain time, it's like what you were saying a moment ago, the thoughts come faster than you can speak them out, and words beyond recognition. That's the spirit moving in you continuously when you speak, Don, because I feel your tones and pitches, you know, change, and the way that you handle a guest host is how, you know, I'm not really good at guest host because I don't know what happens, but I just go wow, you know, to the people. You tend to be able to carry a guest host well. Some people can pull it off really well, but you pull it off great.
Well, number one, when I pick a guest host, I intend to bring somebody that can show us the truth in some fashion, whether it's facts, whether it's concepts, whether and I don't always agree with what my guests say. I may challenge a guest on a particular point, and they'll challenge me. They've done it plenty of times.
Oh, I know. That's what makes it so great. That's what I mean. You know how to handle it. You don't just let the guest host say. You put out there a little test or something to see and then give your point of view, which is what makes it so great. And I just want to say your music, I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting on that CD.
Yes, I know. And it's in the works. I'm actually juggling three projects at once in the area of music, finishing up some things for Tetrahedron Records. You know, the music in 528 that we're doing. I'm on the very edge of having all that complete. And that's going to be really, really interesting for a lot of people to hear some new artists. I'm working on, there's a singer, pianist from Canada, Rosita Stone is her name, and I'm finishing up her CD. There's another one that I featured, last spring, I think it was, Holly Avila's group, Blue Planet, Planeta Azul.
That's a big word.
Yeah, that's Azul, which is Blue Planet in Spanish. They're playing a mix of like American folk music and music from instruments from the Andes and South America. It's very interesting. It's very uplifting and happy sounding music.
You know what I like you said the other day, where Doc said, "Put your foot on the pedal and on the piano and allow it to continue when you play the next note." And he said, "See how that doesn't complete itself before another situation starts?" And he said, "I kind of like it," I like it too. And that's how I play the piano as well. You know, I let it flow and just continue on. And that's what makes the world go round, is each person so unique with their gifts. And
yeah,
so all the people that you were having for the CDs continue. I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, that's okay. I was just going to comment on what you said. I heard a pause there. I thought you had completed your thought. Go ahead if you have more to say.
I just want to say, you know, if everyone would just pay attention. My home ec teacher used to go, "Girls, girls, girls," and flap her hands, "Girls, girls, girls, if you don't pay attention." And she was right. You know, little Miss Stewart. And your shows, along with, they're just not dull. It's like a new recipe, like what's going to be today's food for thought. And I just know that you don't know the count that you have listening, but I'm telling you, you have a lot of listening people. And a lot of people, just like with my shows, they don't call in because I tend to, I believe, carry my own so much that I almost forget to put out the phone numbers, but that's not it. I believe a lot of it. You know how you hear a lot of your work repeated on other people's shows and such, and then people, we mesh together so well with our BBS radio host that we're all on the same wavelength, and that's what I mean by raising the vibration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, over the past 11 months, actually longer than that, because I've been listening to BBS radio a lot longer than you know, the time I've been on with the network. I'm noticing that everybody is kind of, like you just said, moving in the same direction. It's like we're all on the same page. We're melding together.
It's so clicked into the sync, and everybody has a different flavor in there, you know, and their voices, like Matthew, what was her name? Matthew's friend. I mean, she was just praising everybody and thanking everybody today. Her birthday's coming up, too. And a lot of us started at the same time, too. So we all learned from one another.
Well, that's how it goes. And you know what, Kathy? We learn every night, don't we? Or every day, depending on when your show is. We learn something new every day.
That is so true. And if we don't, it's a choice. Because I've made it, if I want to make a decision not to make a decision, then I've already made the decision because I made the decision not to decide. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost like what I'm getting at is that what we feel and think and believe in our hearts, that's what we're going to put out there. That's what you put out there. That's what so many of us put out there. And it's the material that is not stale by repeating the things over again, but in a different concept. And that's what you do. You repeat in a different concept to get your message across, and it made you feel, I believe, like you were repeating yourself. But to me, it wasn't really repeating yourself. It was a different concept, to look at it in a different perspective and a different angle of the birth certificate and the illegal alien. And, you know, you didn't say that before. You said it in a whole different way. You would say it like a news report. And tonight's show is from your heart of hearts, which is so great to hear.
Well, you know, you just said something that makes me think of, you know, how do you awaken a person? I tried the alarm clock, you know, the old style with the little bell that goes drrrr until you hit that button in the back that stops it. And then I tried the little bird chirp, you know, that gets louder as you're waking up. And I tried a frying pan and a spoon and some concert cymbals. And now I'm beating the bass drum. And maybe I should do something really outrageous and get my trumpet out and blow the horn.
I'm sorry. I get so excited. I tell you, son, we're going to go and get some new batteries. That's you.
That's me, yeah.
Do that one.
Oh, you want, I'll tell you what, let me play one that I didn't play tonight.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Okay, for the listening audience, Kathy is speaking code for, she wants to hear some of the promos that I did. I'll play a promo. This is, well, we were talking about illegal aliens, okay? This is what I call the BBS radio illegal alien. So, I'll play this one.
I love it.
Hey, everybody, this is your new friend, Julio, and I'm talking to you because I like to listen to BBSRadio.com. I sneak over the border every day, and I go see my girlfriend. She got a computer. Come on now, sing it, girls.
That's me.
Oh, my gosh. That is too great.
Yeah, you know, one day I was just thinking about, you know, the fact that we have all these illegal aliens coming into the country. And I thought, wouldn't it be great? We have this guy that's coming over the border just to listen to BBS radio on his girlfriend's computer.
That's just so great. I had no idea that was you. Now, I didn't know that the other one was you where it's this way. And you talk like an old man, a real old cowboy, and you say, I'm going to go get me some.
Okay, we just lost Kathy there. I don't know if she dropped off, Seth, or something weird happened there. If you can hear us, Kathy, call back. Anyway, yeah, that was me. Are you with us, Kathy? No, she's gone. She knocked her out. She must have fallen asleep. She'll be calling up again in a second. I have this feeling. Well, anyone else out there listening to Evident Footprints tonight, any comments about this issue of treason or any other topic that you would like to talk about. See, we were just talking about the show in general and the guests and what Kathy likes about the show and the music. Well, we'll wait and see if she makes it back. Maybe her phone died on her, and she won't even make it back. It's rewarding to me to hear someone speak so highly of the show, and of course we should pay attention to many of the other shows that are on throughout the week. In fact, I suppose I could use take a couple of minutes here and describe who my guests are going to be. Oh, she's back. You made it back, Kathy. Welcome back to Evident Footprints. What happened?
Thank you. You know what's funny is I was talking about the batteries, right?
And your batteries died.
I should have listened and paid attention to me. Your batteries, you know, you said you're going to go get some batteries, and you're talking like an old man on that one commercial.
I'm sort of doing
talking about the country guy, and he's going to go get some batteries to play his BBS radio. And my battery went dead because I didn't plug it in.
Actually, I'm doing kind of a poor John Wayne impersonation, and then I'm doing Walter Brennan, and then I'm doing John Wayne doing Clint Eastwood. Do you want to hear that one again?
Yes, that's my favorite.
All right, I'll let you hear that. Now that you know who the actors are, just listen to what they're saying. And if you listen carefully, Kathy, you'll hear some cows in the background, too.
Okay.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans, we got our coffee, and we got this real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Guess what, boss? Got this here radio, they ain't got no battery.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go to town and get some for the both of us.
Go to him. Make my day.
Dadnabbit, you and your BBS radio.
That is great. You are so multi-talented with your voice and music and Evident Footprints, the way that you find things out, you uncover them until they're done. You multitask. I'm going to tell you, happy birthday.
Well, it's my 11th month birthday. Thank you.
I know, but that's still a birthday. Because
a couple of days late.
Got so many things going on, I don't see how you keep up with them all.
Oh, it's a challenge sometimes, you know. It's like I have people ask me why I do the show or how devoted am I to doing this. And I explain that, you know, this is sort of a deal that I made with God. And that God was going to help affect some change here. But, you know, we have to start paying attention to God, and we have to wake up and listen to his voice and follow his guidance. We stopped doing that in this country, and that's why we're in the mess we're in.
That's what my daughter said yesterday, Ashley. She said, if you look back and look at North Carolina, you know, where I'm from, she said it's turned totally ridiculous the way that we've taken the prayer out of the school and just the different things that have started going on just to help other illegal aliens or whatever to go and not offend them.
Now, you know what? There's a lot of wisdom in that comment that you made about, well, you said we've taken the prayer out of the school, and in a sense, that's true in that we've allowed it to be taken out of the school. And consider this, Kathy, one man had an issue about his son praying and because he was an atheist, so the story goes. So he went to the ACLU and they got prayer taken out of the school. One man.
Nuh-uh.
One man.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, if that's possible.
If one man can do that, then think of the power of all of us on BBS Radio, all the hosts, all the call-ins, all the active listeners. If we raise our vibration, which we know we can do because we know we do it when we meditate, what it can do to change the world.
Well, that man, do you think that man had a high vibration and he accomplished
No. I'm talking about if one man can do that negatively,
yes.
Think of what we can do positively.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just expounding on it a bit, and I'm telling the listening audience and you, that wasn't a very high vibration, and he was able to have God taken out of the schools across the country.
Exactly.
What and kind of what kind of Christian or
because I tell you what, I'm so ADD and dyslexic sometimes, I just start speaking and you can unravel everything that I'm meaning really well, and I appreciate that.
Well, I'm underscoring what you said. I'm agreeing with you, but I'm saying, you know, and that's what I said the first time in a way. Maybe I didn't say it clearly enough for you to understand it. Maybe all the listening audience is saying, yeah, Kathy, go, girl, because maybe I didn't say it clearly.
No, my mother says I need to use more layman terms. She says I talk way out there, and what you do is you simplified what I was stating in a better way. I wish I could say it that well.
Well, when you brought the idea forth, okay?
Yeah.
So.
And you know what? Another good thing I want to bring up, good quality about you, is when we do that to other people, that shows that we're actively listening. Because if we say, so I hear what you're saying is, and then place it in another context, then that would keep a lot of people from arguing, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example of something, okay, Kathy?
Okay.
Watch this. Now, what did you see?
I looked over at the picture on the main page, but what I saw actively was like the inside of a light bulb.
What made you see that?
Because I'm in tune and we did a telepathy thing. And I saw light, the inside of a light bulb, like the little things that go up and make the light bulb come on.
Mm-hmm. Now,
what I did was I looked over at the word evident footprints with Don Nikolov, and I looked at your picture. And I remember when you had that guy on that said you were going to use his hair stuff. And that's the light bulb that went off. Because I said, that's the same picture.
Okay, now the reason I said watch this is because we're on radio.
Right, and I know. And so I looked over to watch your face.
Okay, so the thing, the image that should come to your mind is the first question should be, watch what?
I did. I crossed my heart and up to die and stick a needle in my eye. That's the first thing I thought was how can I watch? Is he going to show me something through the air? And then I thought, okay, he's doing telepathy. And then I was doing all these blah, 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 blahs in my head. Well, you said, watch this, and had that pause.
I'm merely using that as a metaphor for what radio isn't. And so, if you hear me use adjectives or you hear me describe things, I'm trying to do it so that it paints the mental picture that we don't have at our disposal. And maybe it's a good thing because we're causing people through the words, through the power of speech, through the emotion and the conviction that we put into what we're saying and the truth and allow the people to see it as they will. Everyone is seeing a different picture when I say something.
Exactly.
It's when,
that's the perspectives, and you know, that's when you go around and I say you as in third person, which I should say I, and that was on my show last week. I What I want to say is that, do you remember when we had a talk one time and I said, oh gosh, what was it? A different outlook. It's almost like, what did you just say that was so important? I've lost my train of thought.
Well, I said that I was painting the mental image for the listening audience so that they could visualize what I'm saying, because we don't use pictures like they do on TV or in a movie.
We don't have that ability on radio,
but we can actually paint more beautiful pictures if we use language the proper way.
You know what you said that was such a good point about 6 months ago when I first called your show, is you said, I don't know how you put it, but you said that, okay, I came back and said, don't open the darkroom door until God has finished developing the picture, because then the picture will be underexposed. You said something like, oh gosh, I wish I could remember it exactly, but it was so good. It's like the pictures are either oil, or they could be acrylic, or they can be chalk, or they can be any kind of picture that we want to paint. It's like you were talking about how when it comes out of one person's mouth and is explained in a different manner, then that's like a truth that they hold then.
Yeah, it can have a totally different meaning, or it can be a different process of bringing the same meaning forth. I think it was probably what I was saying.
And you said it in such a beautiful way, like 6 months ago when I called in. And it was when we first met each other, you know, and realized that we were both, I said, evident footprints, bright lights, pathfinders. Do you remember that? And it was like, that's my name, by the way, listening audience, is bright lights, pathfinders, and evident footprints. And what we were talking about was how the difference is all in the way that we want to perceive it. It was a good conversation we had about exactly what you're saying, but how high is your IQ?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't, well, you know, I've had it measured. That's really not important. It's what we do with it, you know, that really counts.
And what do we use, only 7% or 6%, most people?
Oh, I don't know if it's even that high. I think it's gone down. They, you know, for a long time they were saying we're using about 2% of our capacity, our mental capacity. And from what I see happening around me, it's down a point or two.
Wow. Well, Don, it's about time for you to wrap up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about that time. This was a nice chat. In closing, you know, I don't know if I got an answer from you about this issue of treason. Do you think this is something that people are struggling with, confronting that reality, or do you think people are just don't see it that way?
I feel that people walk around getting up, going to work, eating something, watching TV, going to bed, that they're so into their own self that they, like we said, are not awake, but they're awake. However, they're not going to do anything about it because of fear of they're not going to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they go on about their own personal business so that they don't have to waste, as they think, waste what's one person's going to make a difference.
Well, we already discussed that with the one guy that got God out of the school.
Exactly.
Right?
But that's what my point, my feelings are, is that that's what people don't get involved, is because they think, oh, I got to get up, go to work, go home, watch TV, go to bed, get up, go to work, watch TV, go to bed, you know, all that stuff. And they're listening and they're getting upset. However, they just take it out in other ways instead of doing anything about it.
Well, that one man did it. He didn't go to work that day.
I know.
Right. So why can't we devote one day out of our lives to change this country and turn it around?
Why don't we do that?
Yeah, that's the question.
Let's make it. Let's everybody, like that little surprise news about that newsletter thing.
Mm-hmm.
If we send out a newsletter to everybody on the mailing list, which is so many, and ask them to mail out to their friends to make that a national day, that's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Kathy, we're out of time. I thank you for calling in. For the listening audience, Kathy Cook is the host of Bright Lights Pathfinders every Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on bbsradio.com.
Thank you so much, and it's been an honor and a pleasure to be able to speak with you once more.
Well, thank you for heeding my call to call in, too. I know at least I had one listener tonight.
Oh, you have several because my friends listen, too.
Well, okay. How come they don't call in? Did they pay their phone bill or what?
Huh?
How come they don't call in?
Because it's like with people don't call in on my show very often. I believe that they want to hear more. You know, it's like, let me hear what he's going to say. Let me hear what he's going to say. And also, a lot of people are scared. When I ask someone to be on the show, they're like, oh, I don't know, you know, because they don't realize it's just like talking on the telephone.
Oh, every time I've had a caller, they've done great. It doesn't matter. I mean, we've had calls here, you know. I was hoping people would call in tonight. Maybe they're just really thinking about what we're talking about, you know.
That's what I mean, waiting to hear what you say. Because they're wanting to hear more about what you have to say, and so they don't want to interrupt.
Okay, Kathy, would you do me the honor, and since you listen to Evident Footprints every night, you know how I do it, would you close the show for me?
No. Because that's something that's yours, and yours only, and that is your symbol. And that is something that you should do.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Kathy Cook, thank you for calling in. And I want to encourage all the listening audience to check out Kathy's show every Thursday on BBS Radio, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, Bright Lights Pathfinders. Kathy, thanks for your call tonight.
Thank you. And I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay. God bless. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our guest did not show up tonight, but see, we got a surprise guest, another talk show host, and that was a lot of fun. Special thanks go out to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound and the chat box as well. And be sure, folks, to tune in tomorrow night. I have Mr. Ken Adachi as our special guest, and we're going to get into some real heavy stuff tomorrow night. You're not going to want to miss that show. In the meantime, I wish everyone in the listening audience a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.